Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a starting receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. I'm looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
All right, Lansing, welcome in. Welcome into your Good Friday edition of Current Sports. Jack Kerwin in for Al Martin today. Al will be back on Monday as he is spending Easter with some of his family. I got Connor Mathis in studio with me today, as well as Alec Rio behind the glass. So the inmates are running the asylum once again. Connor, how are you doing, my man?
Doing well, doing well.
Good to hear. Alec, what about you? How's life for you, another Detroit hockey super fan?
Well, I'm wearing my Stevie Y youth large jersey. It's a little bit small, you know, just a little bit small for a jersey. But, you know, I brought it back winter break just in case this news was to come out. And lo and behold, it did this morning. And I'm wearing it proudly.
Prophetic. It's good that you brought it up here then. And you know what? Today is obviously Good Friday, but I think if you ask any Detroit sports fan, it's better than just a Good Friday. It is a spectacular Friday. Steve Yzerman, the former general manager of the Tampa Bay Lightning, effective about 7 months ago when he stepped down from that role, and former captain and three-time Stanley Cup winner with the Detroit Red Wings, it will be announced about 2 hours from now that he will be the next GM of the Detroit Red Wings, with incumbent GM Ken Holland taking a promotion to move upstairs into an advisory role for Yzerman for the foreseeable future. He's got one more year left on his contract, so we'll see what comes of that. But, you know, I just got to lead off. I'll give you some brief thoughts on it, but we're also going to lead the show with it, so I'm going to keep it short and sweet here. This is the most impactful move the city of Detroit has seen in its sporting scene since, at a minimum, since they acquired David Price, the Tigers did, at the trade deadline from the Tampa Bay Rays. And I believe this has a chance to be much more impactful, as obviously Price never helped the Tigers to achieve their ultimate goal of winning a World Series. But, you know, the excitement from fans when the Tigers signed Prince Fielder, you know, the excitement from fans when the Tigers acquired David Price, I would say this will assuredly trump that. This is, you know, the biggest move for the Detroit Red Wings, the best move for the Detroit Red Wings since signing Marian Hossa following the 2008 season when they won the Stanley Cup. And obviously, Ken Holland has been around for, you know, over 20 years as the general manager of the Detroit Red Wings. He has been the architect of three Stanley Cups in that time. He took over for Jim Devolano following the 1997 season when the Red Wings finally won their first Stanley Cup in about 40 years, 42 years to be exact. And, you know, obviously he's faced a lot of scrutiny in recent years, and deservedly so for a lot of it. But, you know, this is quite a move from Ken Holland, as, you know, I never expected him to step down as general manager of the Detroit Red Wings. That's why I never thought this transition would be seamless. And I think, you know, we all kind of saw the writing on the wall, any Detroit sports fan, when Yzerman stepped down as general manager of the Lightning 2 days before training camp about 7 months ago. And he said he wanted to spend some more time with his family. I think we all kind of saw, you know, if you wanted to look closely enough, that, you know, Yzerman would be coming home to Detroit to serve the Detroit Red Wings, his team. But I wasn't sure how the transition was going to work, just because obviously Ken Holland still has a year left on his deal. And, you know, the reason Yzerman even left the Red Wings to begin with was because Holland refused to move upstairs, refused to take a promotion to allow Stevie Y to become the next GM. But obviously, you know, some odd 11 years later, Holland has changed his mind. And, you know, this is a very, very impactful move for the Detroit Red Wings. And in the midst of a rebuild, in the midst of a lot of pain that Red Wing fans have suffered the last couple of years, this is huge, and this will bring a lot more excitement, I think, to Little Caesars Arena moving forward. So, you know, those are my brief thoughts on it. If you have thoughts on Stevie Y, obviously, we'd love to hear from you. The phone number is 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. It is AM 870 WKAR 105.1. And you know what's next. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, and we begin with the Steve Yzerman move. Steve Yzerman is returning to the Detroit Red Wings, with a source confirming to ESPN, and I believe initially TSN, that Yzerman will be named the team's general manager. He spent his entire playing career with the Detroit Red Wings from 1983 to 2006, winning three Stanley Cups in that time, and also scoring one of the most iconic goals in 1996 against Wayne Gretzky and the St. Louis Blues in double overtime in Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals. Here's that bite for you.
On these lines here as we go into this second overtime. Gretzky had it, lost it. Yzerman picks it up. Yzerman moving. Blue line chance. Score! Steve Yzerman! Detroit wins!
And there is that goal. He obviously, following his time working in the front office of the Red Wings, as I just mentioned, he left following the 2009 season, it actually was, and served as general manager of the Tampa Bay Lightning from 2010 until last season, 2018, moving to an advisory position in September. I'll let you know what I make of that following the headliners. All right, moving on. The Detroit Tigers knocked off the Chicago White Sox yesterday to snap their losing streak of five games. They won that game by a score of 9-7. Tigers setting a season high with 14 hits. Nick Castellanos and Miguel Cabrera, who turned 36 yesterday, combined for five hits and four RBIs, and Grayson Griner had a career-high three hits and two RBIs for the Tigers. All right, shifting to some Detroit Lions news. Detroit Lions safety, and really what people would know him as, special team specialist, Don Carey is retiring after 10 seasons in the NFL. He spent the last eight with the Lions. He made the announcement in his hometown of Grand Rapids, stating that he was looking into different business ventures, including potentially bringing arena football back to the area. He also hopes to get involved with the Reach Foundation, which focuses on reading, education, and empowering children. Educating children, I should say. And empowering children as well. So we wish Don Carey all the best in his retirement, and I look forward to seeing what he will do moving forward in Grand Rapids. The NBA playoffs, I will turn this over to Connor Mathis, as he is our NBA inside expert, I suppose, on the current sports show with Al out. So, Connor, what's going on in the NBA?
All right, so the Golden State Warriors, amended some of their problems they had against the Clippers in Game 2. They beat the Clippers 132-105 in the Staples Center to take a 2-1 series lead. Kevin Durant led the charge with 38 points on 14 of 23 shooting in just three quarters. And then Philadelphia also had a bit of a response of their own, beating the Brooklyn Nets 131-115. After Game 2, Jared Dudley called 76ers point guard Ben Simmons average. Simmons naturally then responded with a 31-point outing in the victory. Philly now leads the series 2-1. And the San Antonio Spurs take a 2-1 series lead over the Nuggets after a 118-108 victory in Game 3. And I'll send it back to you for some NHL updates.
Yeah, absolutely. But first off, regarding the Warriors and the Clippers, obviously the 31-point meltdown the Warriors experienced the other day. Do the Clippers win another game in that series?
I think they might.
You think so?
I think so, because just because they have a team of guys who are able to get into the heads of other players, if for nothing else, you could tell that Patrick Beverley in game two had Kevin Durant shook for most of the game, got him out of his zone. And I think a better team can take notes on this, particularly the Rockets, if they go on to play them.
Right.
Get into Kevin Durant's head, because he is very sensitive about a lot of things. So that might be the key to beating the Warriors.
Very sensitive about a lot of things, putting it mildly. And then last question for you. San Antonio Spurs, Denver Nuggets. Who are you siding with on this one, Bryn Forbes or Gary Harris?
I'm still going to go with the Nuggets, but, you know, the Spurs have obviously been here a lot more recently, a lot more experience overall, so I would not be surprised if this game went to 6 or 7 and the Spurs found a way to win.
You know, that's an ordeal, I think, for every Michigan State fan, who to cheer for in that series. I think I'm leaning towards Gary Harris, but I loved Bryn Forbes as well. I loved Forbes' story as a transfer, but, man, I just wish that 15-16 team could have found a way to make a run in the tournament.
Yeah, yeah.
Loved that team, loved the senior leadership, but just wasn't in the cards because Middle Tennessee State took them down in round one. All right, shifting.
Derek White really went off last night for the Spurs as well. You can't forget about that.
Ooh. Fair enough. All right, shifting gears to the NHL. The Carolina Hurricanes topped the defending champion Washington Capitals 2-1 in Game 4 to knot the series up at 2 games apiece. Teuvo Teravainen scored the go-ahead goal with just under a minute left in the second period. And Jaden Schwartz of the St. Louis Blues scored with 15 seconds remaining in the third period of their showdown in Game 5 with the Winnipeg Jets to give the Blues a 3-2 win, giving them a 3-2 lead in the series as well, as the series will now shift gears back to St. Louis for Game 6. Interesting storyline in that series. The home team is 0-5 so far. So the Jets jumped out to a 2-0 series lead following the 2 games in Winnipeg. The Blues jumped out to a 2-0 series lead following Games 1 and 2 in Winnipeg. The Jets responded, taking Games 3 and 4 in St. Louis. And with about 15 seconds left yesterday, Jaden Schwartz ensured that the Blues will be heading back home with a lead in this series as well. So it's been a very weird series. You get a couple like those in the NHL every single year, so it'll be interesting to see what comes of that one in Game 6. And then the San Jose Sharks, who are fighting for their lives, defeated the Vegas Golden Knights 5-2 in Game 5 to extend the series on. Tomas Hertl scored 2 goals 76 seconds into the first period to spark the Sharks early, while Martin Jones, who struggled in this series, made key saves to prevent a comeback from the Knights. Vegas, obviously, will still hold a 3-2 series lead as the series goes back to Las Vegas for Game 6. And, you know, I would say whoever wins Game 6 of this series will go on to win the series. I still think Vegas will do it. But, you know, obviously a lot of pressure's off, I would say, for the San Jose Sharks. And you kind of saw that in that game yesterday. You know, they were flying offensively, and that was the best their offense had looked since Game 1. So we'll see if they can do more of the same in Game 6 or if Vegas will respond. All right, shifting gears to some college and really now, I guess, NFL football. Rashawn Gary poked fun at MSU on the Rich Eisen show yesterday. Yesterday, with a week to go before the NFL draft, appearing on the Rich Eisen show, Gary, a projected first-round pick, was asked by host and U of M graduate Rich Eisen about Devin Bush tearing up the middle of Spartan Stadium back in October prior to Michigan's game at Michigan State. And while Gary, injured, was not present for the game, he took Bush's side in the incident, saying, "That's just a game I wish I was there for. Every time we go play," Gary said, leaning into the microphone, "our little sister, it's always that type of passion and anger you have for that game. Seeing my brother go out there with the emotions that I would have had times 100, it hurts. But we came out with the win, and we own Michigan, period." I think this is such a tired bit, I think, from both parties, the whole little brother, little sister dynamic. I mean, to Rashawn Gary's credit, he actually does leave Michigan with a winning record against Michigan State, which is more than Chase Winovich could have said when he called State little brother following their game back in October. But to me, Connor, this is just such a tired bit, the whole little brother, little sister dynamic.
Every single time one player from one team or another brings it up, the very next matchup they get embarrassed. So I don't know why they keep going back to your coach on either side, why you don't just play the clip of them saying little brother over and over again, saying, "Hey, look, we went on a losing streak because they were fired up about this." The other thing I don't understand, just putting a bow on that whole thing, is Michigan and Michigan fans would have had a cow if any Michigan State player did half of what Devin Bush did to the Spartan logo at U of M, to any part of that field. So, you know, I don't understand the making it a legendary moment. Like,
I mean, it's a rivalry, and whoever wins gets to write the story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know what? You're right. It's not just a Michigan thing, the whole little brother, little sister thing. Obviously, at Big Ten Media Day, I believe it was last season, LJ Scott referred to Michigan as State's little sister. So yeah. I'd be happy if this dynamic just disappeared completely, but I imagine it won't.
It probably will not, and it'll probably hold the trend of someone talks smack, and the very next year their team gets embarrassed.
Well, as Spartan fans, I guess Spartan fans can only hope. All right, shifting gears, MSU baseball. Michigan State hosts Indiana this weekend in a 3-game Big Ten Conference series starting today and running through Easter Sunday, with the Spartans welcoming the Hoosiers to East Lansing for the first time since 2016. As MSU continues its season-long 9-game homestand, tonight's series opener between the Spartans and Hoosiers is slated for a 6:35 p.m. first pitch, followed by tomorrow's 4:05 p.m. first pitch, and Sunday's series finale matinee is slated for 1:05 p.m. All right, shifting gears here, Presley Hudson has signed with the WNBA's Seattle Storm, according to a team press release. The 5'6" guard from Wayland was not selected during the April 10th WNBA draft, but she found a new home to continue her basketball career this week and will have an opportunity to compete for a roster spot. Hudson, who started for 4 years at Central Michigan University, averaged over 20 points her senior year, and she continued to make headlines once the season was completed by winning the national three-point shooting contest at the Final Four in Minnesota. I remember watching that. She could shoot, man. All right, shifting gears, staying with our topic of Central Michigan, though. Central Michigan University announced on Thursday morning that it has fired longtime gymnastics coach Jerry Reighard after a school investigation concluded the coach had repeated disregard for the independent role of medical staff in addressing student-athlete injuries. The school released a statement on Thursday stating the investigation conducted by CMU Faculty Personnel Services highlighted an incident in February in which Reighard tried to undermine the university's concussion management plan, end quote. CMU placed Reighard on administrative leave in February when it was alleged that the coach directed a student-athlete to provide false information about an injury to medical staff, determining the student's ability to compete, the school said. The 121-page report, which current gymnastics team members and Reighard were interviewed for, was presented to Reighard earlier this month, and the coach was given 2 weeks to respond. His response did not change the school's decision to fire him, according to the statement. All right, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, please do so at 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. Share what's on your mind. You can also tweet the show at WKAR_news or tweet me directly at jkirlose, J-K-I-R-L-O-S-E. Let's keep it pushing.
I'm coming home, I'm coming home. Tell the world I'm coming home. Let the rain wash away all the pain of yesterday. I know my kingdom awaits, and they've forgiven my mistakes. I'm coming home.
When he did it too much, didn't think he had a good game.
Shot by Lidstrom was blocked into the corner.
Once again,
winner of the Conn Smythe Trophy,
as the most valuable player, a unanimous selection for a great leader and a great player, Steve Yzerman.
Ah, coming home indeed. And like I just said at the open of the show, Steve Yzerman, it will be announced at 3 p.m. today that he will be the next GM of the Detroit Red Wings. And I think it's very interesting, as, you know, the Red Wings are kind of at a painful point in their rebuild. You know, not a whole lot going on the ice, not a whole lot of excitement for fans to look forward to. That, you know, this can be a real turning point, I think, because I think a lot of people, myself included, as, you know, a Detroit native, as a Detroit sports fan and a diehard hockey fan, I'd felt disenfranchised by the Red Wings the last couple years. It was hard to identify with the moves they were making, and it had just been very tough to be a fan of a team that, you know, was committed to excellence for so many years. And, you know, with this next chapter of Steve Yzerman returning, not as a player, obviously, as an executive this time around, I just think, you know, this can be a rebirth for the team. And he's got a lot of young pieces in place. But make no mistake, you know, this does not change the rebuild process of the Detroit Red Wings. This does not make the Detroit Red Wings a Stanley Cup contender. This doesn't make, in my mind, the Detroit Red Wings a playoff team next season. It is about the long-term view. It is about this program committing itself to, you know, Steve Yzerman, who has been probably the top general manager for 4 or 5 years at least now in the NHL, just as it pertains to building a contender, managing the Stanley Cup, making shrewd decisions to keep your team under the salary cap, and make no mistake, playing in Tampa or managing in Tampa, I should say, he had a great advantage, obviously, with there being no state income tax there. He was able to convince players year in and year out to take less money just because they would still, you know, see a lot of the same profit just because they were taxed less heavily in Florida. And he won't have that asset to his advantage here in Detroit. But, you know, this guy he's had an eye for talent, really, ever since he's taken over as general manager of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And obviously, you know, he did a great job in 4 years as special assistant to Kenny Holland following his retirement in 2006. Otherwise, why would Tampa have poached him away from the Red Wings? But for me, you know, it'll be interesting to see where the Red Wings go from here, but I'm ecstatic. This is the most impactful move we've seen in the city of Detroit since, I don't know, since the Marian Hossa signing to the Red Wings, maybe? I'm not sure. This is the most excited I think fans have been since David Price being acquired by the Tigers at the trade deadline. And, you know, the year before that, obviously, Prince Fielder as well coming to the Tigers. Those, you know, those moves, I just remember the excitement in the city of Detroit, you know, that stars were aligning to try to win a World Series for the Detroit Tigers. And granted, they never did that. But, you know, the moves that were made by Mike Ilitch and his front office with Dave Dombrowski, you know, it sparked a lot of excitement in the city of Detroit, to put it mildly. And I think this move for the Red Wings is, you know, it can put the Red Wings back on track. And obviously, you know, they're not going to be able to compete with, especially their division, teams like the Boston Bruins, teams like the Toronto Maple Leafs, even the Tampa Bay Lightning, even without Steve Yzerman. You know, they're nowhere near contending with those teams yet. But, you know, for me, this will shift gears for the Red Wings towards, you know, back towards contention. And as their rebuild is kind of, I would say it's nearing an end in terms of, you know, them not being competitive, as they've missed the playoffs the last 3 years in a row now. And I don't think they'll be a contender next season for the playoffs. But I think 2 years down the road, I think you could realistically see the Red Wings, you know, shifting back towards, you know, playoff contention. And I think for me, the first step for Yzerman that's going to be really interesting is just managing to work with the cap situation he's got in Detroit. Because obviously the Red Wings have a lot of money freed up. They're going to have around $15 million, assuming the cap goes up a little bit, to play with here in the summer in free agency. And it'll be interesting to see what Yzerman does, because obviously the Red Wings, like I said, they have some money in free agency. But more importantly, they have some bad contracts on the books. And I think in order for them to reach contention, they're going to need to move on from some of these players. And there are going to need to be some shrewd deals made by Yzerman and company to you know, get rid of a Justin Abdelkader contract, if you will, a Franz Nielsen contract, a Danny DeKeyser contract. You know, we'll see what they do with Jonathan Erickson as well. So I'm interested to see just how Yzerman goes about this next season, because, you know, he's got to undo a lot of damage that's been done from Holland trying to win and trying to stay competitive just at a point where it didn't make much sense anymore. And obviously they've embraced the rebuild in Hockey Town now, but, you know, it probably took place a few years after it should have. And, you know, you're kind of seeing, you know, them pay the price for that with some of the big contracts that were signed just prior to the rebuild that, you know, they paid guys probably a little bit above market, or, you know, they signed a guy like Franz Nielsen that would have been a great move for a Stanley Cup contender. But at the time, the Red Wings obviously weren't a Stanley Cup contender, and they're going to be on the hook for that contract for another, I believe, 3 seasons. So I'm interested to see what Yzerman's first move will be, or what Yzerman's first season really as a whole will be, just in terms of, you know, what kind of moves will he make to try to free up some more cap space to, I don't know, bring in a marquee free agent a year from now, or to pay younger players as they make their way up, you know, through the ranks. And obviously Yzerman has had an eye for talent in Tampa Bay, and that's what I think should appeal most to Detroit Red Wings fans, is obviously he acquired the first overall pick and was able to draft Steven Stamkos. You know, he acquired the second overall pick and was able to draft Victor Hedman. But what stands out to me with Steve Yzerman is, you know, the guys he's found late in the draft, the guys he's found undrafted. You know, Tyler Johnson, who is, you know, a lot of people would see as a clone to Marty St. Louis, was an undrafted player coming out of junior. And Nikita Kucherov, who has been one of the best players in the NHL the past couple of years, and arguably, and I would say, a better player than Steven Stamkos, was, you know, picked at the end of the second round. You know, Anthony Cirelli, who was a very impressive rookie this season, was a third-round pick. Yanni Gourde was undrafted. The list goes on and on and on of players that Steve Yzerman has found, him and his scouts have found late in the draft, or, you know, pursued as free agents following the draft. And I'm excited and I'm very interested to see, you know, how that'll transfer to the Detroit Red Wings. Was it Yzerman or was it more of his scouts? And who from his scouting staff will be coming from Tampa Bay to join him in Detroit? So, you know, I'm personally, as a diehard hockey fan, diehard Red Wing fan, very ecstatic with this move. And I'd love to get your thoughts on it. 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. And I'll go behind the glass right now as well, as Alec Rio is a big-time Detroit Red Wings fan as well. Alec, what are your initial thoughts on the move and any response to what I just said?
I definitely agree with you. He has an eye for talent, and he can definitely work with those scouts, you know, to get those, you know, diamonds in the rough in terms of, like, second, third round, even late sixth, seventh round picks. And, you know, just even with him, like, becoming the GM, I feel like that alone would attract players just enough in itself.
No, that's a good point. And especially with, you know, the team moving into a new arena a year ago, and that in and of itself won't be enough to bring in free agents if you have a crappy product on the ice, if you have, you know, not a great roster, if you don't have a great front office situation. But that's a good point, because I think players around the league will take notice that Steve Yzerman is moving to Detroit, and that, you know, they've acquired some great young pieces. And, you know, you got to have a confidence that Steve Yzerman's going to build off of this, and that he's going to add more great players to the fold for the Detroit Red Wings. So that's a really good point regarding free agency. I personally don't think the Red Wings should be a big player in free agency this season, just because I still think there's more work to be done, you know, with the cap space that it's the Red Wings do not have a short-term window, because their window isn't even open yet, really. You know, the rebuild is still going. They will still, in my mind, I still think they'll miss the playoffs next season. I think it'll be another brutal season on the ice, but fans just need to trust and respect the process, especially now that, you know, you can have a little bit more confidence that it's Steve Yzerman leading the rebuild. It will not be Ken Holland. He'll obviously still be there as an advisor. And let's not forget that Ken Holland has faced a lot of scrutiny the last few years, and deservedly so in a lot of ways, but he has done a good job, and I would say the past 2 seasons, of acquiring draft picks and, you know, drafting talent that, you know, obviously a lot of it, it's a little too early to tell how these guys will pan out. But, you know, Zadina last year with the 6th overall pick was lauded as a pick. You know, Joey Valeno getting drafted 30th overall, that guy received exceptional player status in Canadian juniors when he was a 15-year-old, and people were expecting him to be drafted in the top 10. He fell all the way to 30, and Holland was able to nab him. So, you know, there have been some good moves in recent memory. The Thomas Tatar trade as well, trading Tatar to Vegas for a first, second, and third round pick. Ken Holland has made moves to expedite this rebuild, and he has acquired a lot of draft picks for this draft as well, and now he's turning them all over to Steve Yzerman. It'll be interesting to see what Yzerman does from here. And you know, going off of that, it'll be interesting to see if the Red Wings will be more active on the trade market as well, just because, you know, you haven't seen Ken Holland make a value-for-value trade, as they say, or an impactful one in a very long time. Probably the last one would have been Brad Stewart getting acquired at the deadline, and I believe it was 2009 or 2010. So, you know, you've seen Holland buy at the deadline, you know, years following that, you know, as the Red Wings window was kind of closing, but they were still, you know, perceived by many to be a cup contender. And you've seen Steve Yzerman sell assets the last couple of years as well. Or Steve Yzerman, geez. You've seen Ken Holland sell assets the last couple of years as well.
Like Kali Yarncroc.
Yeah, Kali Yarncroc.
Main example, when he traded for David Legwand, who was on here for 5 minutes.
Yeah, he was a rental for the end of the year, and he basically helped the Red Wings reach the first round of the playoffs, only to get bounced by the Boston Bruins in five games. And you know what? The list goes on and on. You know, Matthias Janmark, who's in Dallas as well, he was acquired in exchange for Eric Cole, who was barely able to even play with the Red Wings. But my point is, going off of that, it wasn't even so much, you know, criticizing Holland for acquiring guys at the deadline who just weren't impactful. It was, you haven't seen Ken Holland make value-for-value, player-for-player trades for the Red Wings in a very long time, I would say. And I would expect that to change with Steve Yzerman, just because you've seen the moves he's made in Tampa Bay, obviously, trading Jonathan Drouin just last year for Mikhail Sergachev as they needed to shore up their defense. You know, obviously, Ryan McDonough, I guess that was a trade deadline rental as well, but you know, they acquired Ryan McDonough from the New York Rangers, and it wasn't a rental. I take that back. It was a deal made at the trade deadline, but for a guy in Ryan McDonough who had some term left on his deal. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, Ben Bishop as well was acquired via, I believe it was Ottawa, and then I can't remember if Ben Bishop moved on in free agency. I think he just walked. I don't think the Lightning traded him. But, you know, they acquired Ben Bishop in, via a trade with Ottawa, and he provided solid goaltending for him for a number of years before the Lightning made a trade with the Red Wings and traded up to draft Andre Vasilevsky, who went on to succeed Ben Bishop. And, you know, Ben Bishop was able to walk out the door. So the prospect pool, the pool of young players, has always been very fruitful for the Tampa Bay Lightning under Steve Yzerman's watch. And, you know, I just expect that to continue with the Detroit Red Wings as well. And I'm thrilled, despite how critical I've been of Ken Holland in you know, recent years, I am thrilled that Ken Holland is staying on as an advisor to Yzerman for at least this next season. You know, we'll see where Holland goes following the expiration of his contract a year from now, whether he has any interest in, you know, taking over a managerial position in somewhere like Vancouver, you know, which is near his home, or Seattle with them joining the league a year from now. It'll be interesting to see if Holland has any interest in any of those jobs. But for now, I'm thrilled that he's taking this promotion and that he'll still stay on as an advisor to Yzerman, because let's not forget, the man did win three Stanley Cups as a general manager in the NHL with the Detroit Red Wings. And he, you know, he watched the rebuild the first time around that involved Steve Yzerman as a player, you know, back in the early 80s all the way through to the 90s when they won their first cup in 1997. So, you know, Alec, I'll go behind the glass to you before we hit our first break. What are your thoughts on Ken Holland staying around as an advisor to Stevie Y?
You know, I'm fine with it. You know, as long as he's, you know, just staying by Yzerman's side and just making sure he's getting the job done, I don't see a problem with it, quite frankly.
Yeah, no, well said. And I think, as you know, as you acquire a group, if you will, a brain trust, I think it's good to have as many people around who have experienced success at the highest level as possible. So, you know, for that aspect, obviously, it's awesome to see Ken Holland sticking around with his buddy Steve Yzerman, you know, for at least the next season and quite possibly years further on, because, you know, at the end of season press conference about a week and a half ago, Ken Holland talked about how much he loved the city of Detroit and how he'd been a Red Wing for, you know, I believe it was 35 going on 36 years now, and, you know, how grateful he was to the city of Detroit. So it'll be interesting to see if he stays around in this new role or if he moves on. But either way, you know, I'll wish him all the best. And I think, you know, fans have a lot to be grateful of and should not forget not only the success he enjoyed in the early 90s or the late 90s and the early aughts as GM, but also the moves he made leading up to Yzerman taking over today to kind of expedite this rebuild. So, you know, a lot of respect for Ken Holland and the work he's done for the Red Wings in his 20-some years as general manager. So what I want to do now is I want to hit our first break, and we'll invite Connor Mathis on the show following this break, as I know he's not a big hockey guy, but we love talking NFL on here on Current Sports. And, you know, we'll talk some NFL draft, as that is just 6 short days away. So don't go anywhere. AM 870, 105.1, WKAR, Jack Kerwin in for L. Martin. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports, AM 870, 105.1 FM. Jack Kerwin in for L. Martin today. And I got Connor Mathis and Alec Rio with me as well. Al will be back in on Monday, I believe. And if you have any thoughts on the segment we just wrapped up regarding Steve Yzerman, we'd love to hear from you at 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. But what I want to do right now is I want to shift gears a little bit because, you know, I touched on this with Kyle Turk a little bit yesterday. We talked about specifically the needs of the Detroit Lions and where, you know, we may see them going with the 8th overall pick in the draft that is next Thursday, just 6 short days away now. But I want to take a broader look at the mock draft released by Daniel Jeremiah, and then as well, did the one from Bucky Brooks, is that out already as well?
Yep.
So 2 mock drafts here, and I just want to kind of get Connor's thoughts on these, and, you know, we'll kind of discuss it a little bit. But I guess first and foremost, who is your ideal pick for the Detroit Lions at number 8?
If he falls, I'll say Montez Sweat is probably the best look for them. Another one of big if he falls guy, Josh Allen, because my needs for the Lions are, in this no particular order, edge rusher, a true wide number one wide receiver, tight end, quarterback, defensive back, outside linebacker, and guard. Those are the areas I think they really need, and I think they need an edge rusher really, really bad.
Yeah, to go on the other side of Trey Flowers, who they just handed $17 million. Yeah. No, absolutely. And you know what? I think that is the best case scenario for the Detroit Lions, that Montez Sweat, former Michigan State product, prior to his transfer to the other MSU, Mississippi State. I think the best case scenario for the Lions is that he's on the board at 8. And, you know, regarding Josh Allen, I'll be honest with you, I think that's a little optimistic.
It's very optimistic. So, if he falls, you know, I mean, you never know. I mean, the report just came out to that Gruden, the guy who's looking at him, is locked out all of his scouts. So who knows what the top of the draft is going to look like. But I think the top of this draft is going to be pretty defensive heavy for like the first time in a really long time.
Absolutely. And aside from quarterback, I'm not sure there'll be an offensive player picked before the Lions
I don't think so.
Get on the board at 8. The only other one would probably be Jonah Williams, the offensive tackle from Alabama. But depending on where he falls, obviously the Giants need some help on their offensive line, but you know, they might take a quarterback too, or they might go defensive. Who's to even say what the New York Giants are going to do at this point in time? But you know what? I agree with you on the Montez Sweat pick. I think Josh Allen would be,
if he falls,
best case scenario, I guess, like best case scenario, that Josh Allen will be available for them at number 8. But I really just don't see that happening for him. Without trading up, and Bob Quinn said yesterday he doesn't think he has the ammunition to trade up in the draft anyway. But he did say he would explore trading down a few picks, and I want to get your thought on that, because I have a very, very specific, very strong opinion on this, but I want to hear your thoughts first.
I think it depends on how that first set shakes out. If this first set shakes out and you're not going to get your premium edge rusher, the guy who you're like, yes, this is going to be our guy for
Montez
Sweat, I mean, you'd be settling a little bit with Rashawn Gary, but I think if Rashawn's still there, I mean, it's a settle, but I feel like they still make that move.
Oh, I'd hate that move at 8. And that's not even me hating on Michigan as much as it is Rashawn Gary did not have the production for me to value taking him at 8.
I get that, but I think it depends on how that first set shakes out. If the first set shakes out and you lose all your number one guys, you're like have to have guys, you know, the Montez Sweats, the Josh Allens, which again we talked about, he's probably not going to fall there. But if you miss out on your top guys, then I think it's okay to trade back, because with their needs being on the defensive line, You can afford to move back. This is a very deep class for the defensive line. Now, should they trade back to the 20s or the late teens? Absolutely not. If they trade back, it should be like to a Denver Broncos or to a Miami Dolphins.
Yeah,
or
so
to
three, four, five picks.
Three, four, five picks, you know, early teens where you're still going to get that premium talent, but, you know, it's not like the guys you're trading up for are swooping in for the need or have the same needs you do.
So I appreciate that, and here's my opinion on this because – you know, basically, as soon as I've heard this, I heard this report that the Lions are aggressively looking to trade back. I've had this one opinion, and that's that, you know, if I were ownership, I would sit down with Bob Quinn and make it very clear to him that he can do whatever he wants. He's the general manager of the team. I'm not going to tell him how to do his job. But if it were me, I would say Bob Quinn would be on the hot seat going into this season. And while he has done some good work in the NFL draft, he drafted a Kerryon Johnson, who looks like he's going to be a nice player. He drafted Kenny Golladay, looks like he's going to be a nice player. Taylor Decker is a nice player. Frank Ragnow, the jury's still out, could be more than a nice player. But he looks like, at a minimum, he'll be a nice player. But when I look at 3 years of drafting from Bob Quinn, I do not see one star. He has not drafted one star in three seasons. And the problem for me is, he might be perfectly capable of drafting stars, but he's drafted around 16th through 20th each time in the draft so far this season. And what better way to accumulate a star player than with the 8th overall pick? That's why I don't want to see the Lions move back.
And I would agree with you. The other thing, too, is Bob Quinn's picks have been pretty conservative. It's not like, you know, every year we have a couple of guys that come into the NFL draft, and it's like, well, he could be a really good talent, but he has, you know, either an off-the-field issue or he has a lingering injury or there's some sort of skeleton in the closet that's like, well, I don't know. This could be a risk. The Lions are looking for a star. They're looking for someone to make it so that they're not stuck in neutral, which they've been stuck in neutral. And, you know, outside of the defense, I think if they trade back, I think they would have to go with getting weapons for Stafford. But the one thing I will say is, I do not want to see the Lions take a tight end in the first round.
No,
a tight end
no.
is a in the NFL. A tight end is a luxury. That means you have what you need. You can get your tight end, and that completes a puzzle. No. The Lions need so much more than a luxury. They can in theory, if they do the right things in the draft, they can make do with the tight ends that they have. They don't need to go out and spend a top 10 pick, or even if they trade back to like 10 through 12, a top 15 pick on a tight end. They are not in the position to do that. There's just too many holes on the roster right now.
So let me tell you where they actually have TJ Hockenson, who you'd be talking about if the Lions were to select a tight end in the top 10. So they actually have him going one pick after the Lions, 9th overall, to the Buffalo Bills, giving Josh Allen a friend.
That'd be a real Adam Gase move.
Yeah, but Adam Gase isn't in Buffalo.
Oh, no, not Buffalo. Oh, well,
no, he's in New York.
Same thing.
He's in New York.
I stand by my statement of that's a real Adam Gase move. Saying it, when you're a team that's not like on the fringe of playoff contention or not in playoff contention where you're like a wild card out, you know, you have to address your team needs. The draft is the best place to do that. In free agency, you see a lot of teams that overspend on guys that they're not entirely sure of. In the NFL draft, I feel like if you're a team that's not on the cusp of contending or on the cusp of really doing some of the playoffs, you have to address your needs. You can't do the best player available. It doesn't work for all teams that way.
Well, here's the one counterpoint I would make. And I hear you, and I think the best case scenario for the Buffalo Bills would not be to take Hockenson in the top 10. It would be to take like a DK Metcalf or Paris Campbell in the second round of the draft to get a compliment for Josh Allen.
Or in the Bills' case, even them, if they aren't sold on the guy, trade down, because the Bills are still, I would think, a year or two out of an actual decent contending team. Just there's too many missing pieces. So if you're in the Bills position and you know you're probably going to be picking top 15 again next year, sure, why not trade down? But I wouldn't understand them going and overvaluing a guy that realistically you know you're not going to be in the you're probably not going to be in the playoff race next year.
Well, here's the thing though, is his presence valuable enough to the development of Josh Allen, who struggles with accuracy, and TJ Hockenson's about 8.5 feet tall. Would it benefit the Buffalo Bills to give Josh Allen a safety blanket to go along with? Obviously, he's got a huge arm and he's a mobile quarterback as well, but he struggles with his accuracy. Could it benefit them to give Josh Allen the safety blanket of TJ Hockenson?
if I'm of the mindset, if you have a young quarterback and you're concerned with his development, there are two routes you go. You get him a wide receiver that he can grow with and he trusts. I'm trying to think. Like on the Dolphins, it was Jarvis Landry with Ryan Tannehill. That was his safety blanket. Mm-hmm. You get a wide receiver who your quarterback can trust, can grow, can develop with, and that's their go-to guy. I like wide receiver a little bit more than tight end because typically a wide receiver you can be a little more versatile with, there's a little more speed involved. Or the other route is you go offensive line. Those, if you have a developing quarterback, those are the two routes I like.
That's a great point.
Again, tight end to me is a luxury in the NFL. If you have one, great, but there are plenty of teams in the NFL that last year, who the top two tight ends in the NFL were Kelce and Gronk. Everyone else did okay with, to be honest, just other guys.
Well, I wouldn't say Gronk was a top two tight end in the NFL last season. Was the other thing. I mean, Gronk stunk last year. If we're being honest,
his role with the Patriots, I would mean he's a bigger value. He's a luxury for them.
Yeah, but I don't know if he was last season just because of the injuries. And I mean, I thought he dropped off big time last year.
I thought in the playoffs he was kind of their X factor in those late games.
Yeah, I mean, especially basically the one throw Tom Brady had to make in the Super Bowl. He hit Gronk on that one. Yeah. But and that is a good point. He was more of a factor in the playoffs. But to your point, no, I agree with that. And I think it would be interesting. I think it would be an okay move for the Bills to take Hockenson. I think they would be better suited to probably take Jonah Williams at number 9 or an offensive lineman. And like I said, go for a Paris Campbell or a DK Metcalf or a N'Keal Harry in the second round to give that compliment to Josh Allen there. I think the roster as a whole would benefit more from that, I would say. And then I got one more for you here. We have Michigan guys going in successive picks, Devin Bush 12th to the Packers, and then to your Dolphins 13th, Rashawn Gary. What do you make of that?
I would not be happy with the Dolphins if they went Rashawn Gary.
I wouldn't be happy if the Lions went with Rashawn Gary either.
Personally, the Dolphins, they're talent starved. And Rashawn Gary, like, again, they need an edge rusher. That's for sure. But I don't know if for them, if Rashawn Gary's the guy. I would prefer a linebacker down there, another cornerback, defensive back. The Dolphins right now don't have an identity, and they probably won't have one until next year because it's all but announced that they're tanking for Tua this year.
So you think there's no chance they trade up for a quarterback this season?
No. If they do, I will have no idea what the front office is up to, because if you look at the roster they've assembled over this offseason, it is very clearly a we are tanking roster. But for the Dolphins, the other thing for the Dolphins is I wouldn't mind an offensive lineman, because right now the only offensive lineman they have is Laremy Tunsil. So Rashawn Gary, I just don't think for where the Dolphins are right now, he'd be a solid choice. I feel like if it gets to that point where they're not sold on anyone, trade again, because the Dolphins are at least 2, 3, 4 years outside of contention, trade down, get more draft capital for the next year. That's just my opinion.
No, that's a good point. And I think any way you look at it, Rashawn Gary is going to be a project.
He's in that spot of, yeah, he can play defensive end, but he could also, if an NFL team took the time, he could play defensive tackle too. So I think it's a matter of figuring out where you want him on your team. And then, like you said, developing him.
Yeah, fair enough. No, but I just mean I agree, but I mean, just from a development standpoint, you know, his production wasn't there like it was for a Brian Burns or like it was for a Nick Bosa or like it was for a Josh Allen, for any of those other edge rushers. And that's just why I think it'll take Gary a little bit more time to get acclimated to the NFL, if you will, because, you know, obviously he was an anchor at Michigan, I guess. But at the same time, you know, every great edge rusher, every great defensive lineman draws double teams, mm-hmm. and they're still able to produce. Yeah. And Rashawn Gary didn't have, you know, quite the production to me that would justify taking him in the top 10 or top 15.
You know, the other thing, too, is he's a bigger guy. Like, he's just physically bigger. And in the NFL, it's one thing to be big of all on the defensive line, but he's listed at 6'4", 277. Where he's at, if he wants to be an edge rusher in the NFL, he needs to lean up a little bit, because that NFL edge rush, all about the speed.
It's all about speed.
It's all
hand
about
strength.
The speed.
Yep.
And like you said, he does not handle double teams that well. So
at least not yet.
And not yet. And he you know, if he's still that bigger guy, that guy that takes up more space, I don't know if he's going to be an edge rush, a really good edge rusher for an NFL team. And that's kind of what the Dolphins need, because they got rid of their really good edge rusher, Cameron Wake, this year. So
fair enough. And I guess one more for you. First off, real quick, do you see Kyler Murray going to the Cardinals first?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think every time that they've said that they're not taking him, it's been smokescreen. There's just been too much. They left Josh Rosen out of their team promotion. I mean, come on. The writing is on the wall. He is gone. How well Kyler Murray does in the NFL remains to be seen, but
I think he'll be good.
I think he'll be good. I'm optimistic. But I'm also a bit nervous because he's going to the Cardinals.
Yeah, no, that's fair. But I mean, you bring in a guy like Cliff Kingsbury, the goal is with that type of offense that Kingsbury is going to be that Kingsbury is going to bring to Arizona, you'll get the most out of a guy like Kyler Murray, who, you know, ran obviously a spread while he was at Oklahoma, and
he's got a good arm too. I think that's a really
underrated.
It's an undervalued part of his game. I mean, I remember I went to the West Virginia Oklahoma game, and I was just blown away by some of the throws that he was making. It's incredible, really.
No, that's a good point. And, you know, I think it's disingenuous for that reason why when people label him as a pocket or as a mobile quarterback.
No.
Because it's like to me labeling Russell Wilson as a mobile quarterback. No, yeah. He has mobility, but the thing is, you know, when he gets outside of the pocket and when he runs,
it's oftentimes
to make a throw downfield, mm-hmm. still, instead of tucking the ball and running away with it. And then last question for you regarding quarterbacks before we hit our final break before Reflection Friday to close out the show. What do you think the best landing spot is for Dwayne Haskins? They have him staying in state here, going to Cincinnati. And I've been adamant that I don't think he's a good fit in New York, just because, you know, should the Giants take a quarterback, I think the one thing Haskins needs is an offensive line. I don't think Haskins needs great weapons around him, to be honest with you, because when you watch what Dwayne Haskins does pre-snap, I've said this before, it is Manning-esque the way he's able to diagnose a defense, mm-hmm. and put his team into the best possible play. He doesn't have the arm that Peyton Manning has quite. He doesn't have the accuracy quite that Peyton Manning has, although he's still a very accurate quarterback. But he's such a cerebral player, and I just think he needs a little bit of time in the pocket as well to kind of, you know, find the best option every single play, every single time he drops back to pass, and I don't think he's going to get that in New York. So for teams that need quarterbacks, I guess I could give you the Raiders could potentially take him at 4.
I don't think John Gruden's taking a quarterback this draft. I think he's sitting and waiting. Fair
enough, but would you agree that Derek Carr is not his long-term quarterback?
Derek Carr is not his option. I think that's pretty obvious. My only counterpoint to the New York argument is that him with Saquon Barkley could be something special. But again, offensive line makes me nervous, him going to New York. I'd say his best bet would be I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to say Denver. If he gets in there.
Again, what about the Elway curse?
The Elway curse is
Elway
real.
Doesn't know anything about quarterbacks for being one of the best quarterbacks of all time.
Yeah, but I think he could work. I think he could really work in Denver. The only reason I'm not so sold on the Bengals yet is because I'm not sure the Bengals are sold on what they're doing as a franchise.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Right now, whereas the Broncos at least have somewhat of an identity to build upon. Like, they got a good defense, so it's not like Haskins is going to have to put up 50 points a game for them to win. Their defense will hold up their end of the bargain. So if it's not New York, I think Denver could be a really, really good spot for Dwayne Haskins. Plus, you know, Mile High Air, that ball's going to fly.
Well, the one counterpoint I'll make is I don't think the Denver Broncos just hired a defensive coach in Vic Fangio to draft a quarterback 10th overall. But I see where you're coming from, because, you know, I don't think Joe Flacco is going to be the long-term solution there. So we'll see what happens with Haskins. I'm really excited about him. I haven't been this excited about a quarterback prospect or duo, if you will, in a long time. So what I want to do is we'll hit our second break here, and when we come back, we will put a bow on the show with Reflection Friday. Don't go anywhere. WKAR's Current Sports. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Jack Kerwin in for Al Martin. Al will be back next week. What I want to do here is, just as we put a bow on this Good Friday, Fri-yay edition of Current Sports, we're going to get to Reflection Friday here real quick. And obviously, we had a lot to choose from. The spring game, obviously, over the weekend, and then the NBA and NFL playoffs. Connor, I'll start with you. What is your biggest takeaway? What's your favorite moment of this week in sports?
All right, so the NFL schedule dropping. First off, the Monday Night Football schedule being awful, except for three games: the Texans Saints Week 1, Kansas City Chargers Week 11, and Colts Saints Week 15. I think it is an awful slate of games on Monday Night Football. And then also a real quick highlight, because next year, I'm sure, as everyone's aware, is going to be the Tua sweepstakes. We have two tank for Tua bowls, one between the Giants and the Finns in Week 15, and the second one between the Finns and Bengals in Week 16. So two tank for Tua bowls. Really a question of who wants it less to win the game.
Fair enough. And you know what? You and I talked off air about this regarding the Monday night schedule, is that, you know, when the crew struggles as much as the current crew you have in Monday Night Football, and Monday Night Football is a debacle right now.
It's not fun to listen.
I'm not sure I need a bunch of primetime games on Monday Night Football. I'll stick with Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth and more Mike Tirico, as much Mike Tirico as possible on Sunday Night Football. I would rather see those guys handle the primetime games, at least the marquee matchups. So that's interesting for me. It'll be the NHL playoffs. It'll be, you know, specifically the Tampa Bay Lightning. Just the way they fell apart.
I couldn't believe that. I barely watch hockey, and I was like, what is going on here?
I mean, this was a team that was drawing comparisons to the 2002 Red Wings as one of the best teams of all time. And they won the President's Trophy by, you know, 20 points. And then to go out and be dominated the way they were in the first round of the playoffs against the 8 seed Columbus Blue Jackets, second wild card in their conference, was flat-out shocking. And then obviously the other one was announced earlier today, and there will be a press conference about 1 hour from now. It's Steve Yzerman returning home to the Detroit Red Wings. I think Red Wings fans have a lot to be excited about. Real quick, 30 seconds left. Alec, what is your Reflection Friday? What is your biggest moment in sports this week?
Well, going off of what you said, Tampa Bay and the Pittsburgh Penguins both getting swept. You know, that's got to be up there. And, of course, Steve Yzerman taking over as our GM. That's got to be it for me.
Yep. So it'll be interesting to see what the Pittsburgh Penguins do moving forward. The core is a little bit older than they were before. It'll be interesting if they have one Stanley Cup in them, but we'll see as time goes on. Anyway, thanks for tuning in all hour. Jack Kerwin, Connor Mathis, Alec Rio, for Al Martin. Be easy, people.